Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much for that news update, Greg. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock right now on this day, the 23rd of October. Back in 1812, there was a failed coup attempt against the French leader at the time, Napoleon. In 1958 on this day, the Smurfs would first appear thanks to Belgian cartoonist Peyo. In 1975 on this day, Sir Elton John would receive his Hollywood Walk of Fame star. At the time, he was not, of course, knighted. Since then, he has been. In 2001 on this day, Apple would release the iPod. In 2006, on this day, we would sadly lose Lebo Mathosa, the musician. But at the same time, on the other side of the world, Beyoncé Knowles would release the song Irreplaceable. I wonder if those two events might have been linked. In 2018, on this day, the sea crossing bridge opened by President Xi Jinping would be known as the longest bridge in the world that would be of its kind, at a length of 55 kilometers. You're tuning into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we are taking a look at the developments from famous brands. They give us an update on how their first half of the year has been going. We're going to speak to the company's CEO, Darren Heel, about the performance and get a sense of where to from here. Then we're going to speak to KPMG's lead economist, Frank Blackmore, around the latest CEO outlook that's been put out. This has been put together as an inaugural initiative around understanding things around cybersecurity, global geopolitical tensions, artificial intelligence, and economic growth, amongst other things. We've also got a conversation with Eduvos around the educational opportunities that are available from their perspective going into the 2025 academic year. And then we're going to touch base with the chairman of South African Airways. SAA seems to be debt-free for the first time in a very long time. We're going to speak to the SAA chair, Derek Anacom, around that and what the prospects for our national carrier look like now. Then we've got a conversation wrapping up our Wednesday as part of our executive lounge with the CEO of a company called Tuesday Consulting. We're going to get to know Wendy Spelding a little bit more and get to know what she does when she's not being a CEO.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As usual, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day, and I'm glad to welcome back Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro to take a look at market movements and try and make sense of everything that's happening in South Africa and around the world. Good evening, Uncle David. Lovely to have you back. How was your holiday?
Busy. Family. When you've got family and two young, they're not adult grandchildren now, Swell, you're on your toes all the time, so I'm glad to be back, resting.
Did you get a chance to keep up with
it? I have to tell you something. When I look at going to Hussar's or any of the famous brands' restaurants and eating there compared with what you have to pay for similar kind of meals in New York or Boston, believe me, you feast up. You've got no idea what a steak costs in the U.S. So, yeah.
Sounds like you're glad to be home. It's always good to come back home and appreciate what we have to offer here. Let's look at some of those developments from the home front. Famous Brands gave us that update. I've got the conversation with the CEO a little later on. Seemingly okay set of numbers. Yeah. Your interpretation of that?
Look, you've got to hand it to them. I think they're coming back from the gourmet burger debacle and slowly picking up their picking up momentum here as well. And I think generally those companies, Spur, Famous Brands, have done very well. And they, there's a lot going on in those areas. Unfortunately, I think it's at the top end of the market where they're taking a little bit of a strain. But, they're good businesses. And there's still some work to get them back. And Jimmy, you've got to believe, you've got to remember, they went through COVID. They went through load shedding. They went through, load shedding as well had an enormous impact. The high costs of the food, and you can't pass that on to the consumer. So I think when you look at the results, you have to understand what they've had to negotiate to get to where they are today. It hasn't been easy for them. And yet, you know, they've persevered and come out with very respectable numbers.
I think that is definitely what has been something that has been lingering with the restaurateurs in particular is there's a lot of costs they couldn't pass on. At some point, they did face an existential threat when we were in the midst of level 5 lockdowns. But it is good to see everybody sort of getting back on track and getting back to business as usual. Speaking of business as usual, PGMs, we always have to have a look at those because the platinum price is finally above $1,000. Yeah, we've been waiting months for this.
I know. It goes there and then it falls back and it goes there, falls back. But Jimmy, it will, you know, rates are going to start coming down. China is going to stimulate its economy. It might not be at the pace we want, you know, but it might be at a slower pace. But eventually we're going to get there. And, you know, I'm still positive. I think even before I left, I was positive on where markets are going. I still think we're going to have very good years next year and so on. Don't be impatient. You know, you're going to get the kind of volatility that we get all the time. That's the nature of markets and that. But I think the trend, in other words, the trajectory is still up. And PGMs, as you say, creeping up, you know, beyond 1,000, the former base, up another bit as well. So I'm still optimistic on you know, where we'll be next year.
Uncle David, David, how do we feel about the U.S.? We are weeks away from U.S. elections, and everything seems to be in focus around the U.S. You've just come back from the U.S. Yeah. How's the sentiment? What's the mood like there at the moment?
Well, first of all, on the economy, it's pumping. I know that they say soft landing. There's no such thing as a soft landing. The you know, if you go in, I was in New York and Boston. It's busy. You know, there are tourists. People are spending. If you go down to you know, the theater, they're full all over. Broadway is packed. So I never saw any sense of kind of a slowdown. I know it's New York. It's a rich city. The average wages are way above anything in Europe or the UK and so on. The big issue there is, and they're going to continue. The people I spoke to, it was all about technology, whether it was biotech, whether it was about, you know, AI and so on. A lot happening, and it's going to continue. And I think America will dominate. The election, that's something else. It's, you have a nation that's split right down the middle and hate on both sides. You know what I mean? This is not, this is two warring factions against each other. You've got the very cruel Trump. I think people are bored with him. They're bored with his claims, his cruelty, corruption, and lies, and so on. And I think, but still, he's got a very strong support base. On the other hand, you've got Kamala, who's not very popular, but at least she's an antidote. You know what I mean? She's a respectful person. She doesn't use foul language. You know, she doesn't cozy up to Putin. You know, she's untainted and she's been in public service. She respects the Constitution. She respects the law. So that's who you've got on two sides. Who's going to win? I have no idea. It's very, very difficult to call because it comes down to those marginal states, you know, to those swing states. That's it. A few states are going to decide. Wisconsin, Michigan, and so on, you know.
That U.S. electoral system is still so complicated. Uncle David, let's wrap things up with a look at EOH. They gave us results today. Yeah. Is anyone still watching that?
It's a pity. You know why? Because it's a business we need. As you get the, call it the digital transformation, companies have to continually upgrade their services. They have to upgrade their IT and that. And it's a business that should be prospering. They're still battling from the past. It's dragging them down. It's just a pity, you know. That's why the mess that this company caused itself is just tragic. But I think from this point of view, I don't know if they're ever going to get out of this. I know the losses are being reduced, a lot of work to do to get back to anywhere near where they used to be.
Still lots of work to be done and markets are still digesting all of the movements that are unfolding. I think we'll leave it at that, Uncle David. Thank you for the time and for the insights. Welcome back. That's David Shapiro of Sasfin Wealth joining me to reflect on the market movements throughout the day as well as what's been happening in the US.
Time. When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This morning, before 8 a.m., before the markets even opened, Famous Brands gave us an update on their performance for the 6 months ended August 2024. They had some interesting things to say about how the burger business is doing. And I'm joined on the line by the company's group CEO, Darren Heal, to take a look at the company's performance and try and make sense of the first half of the year that was. Good evening, Darren. Thanks so much for taking the time. Interesting start to the new financial year. I suppose there's been a lot that the business has had to contend with over the last couple of years. How do you reflect on the first 6 months?
Yeah, evening, Jimmy. Yeah, I mean, probably glad to see the back of it. Particularly the first quarter of our half was very tough. Certainly some of the toughest that I've seen. And not often that your restaurant sales lag prior year, and at times we saw that in the period. So yeah, we're glad that's behind us and looking forward to H2, which is already looking up.
Darren, when we look at some of the key metrics for the first half of the year, I mean, operating profit kind of flat. Ordinarily, that would be something that investors might say is a bit of a concern, but still, at 370 million rand for the group, that's not a small number at all.
Yeah, I think given the drop-off, particularly in Q1, we're pleased with it. Agreed. I mean, it's not a metric investors typically like, but I think you've probably seen in some circles results going backwards. So we're quite pleased that we managed to keep it up there. And of course, you know, push a growth in earnings through HEPS up, which has really been, you know, around focused on cost control as well as keeping the balance sheet nice and tidy.
Darren, speaking of the balance sheet, I want to look at something from the, this would sit on the cash flow statement, I suppose. Net cash outflows from financing activities, quite a significant movement from a positive to a negative. Do you want to just take us through some of those movements?
Yeah, nothing material in there that one has to be concerned about. You know, generally the cash from operations was slightly down, which is reflected in that revenue number and the operating profit. So, you know, we've been able to service everything we've needed to do and have a similar cash balance at the end. But they are primarily just linked to the lower revenue, essentially.
Darren, when we look at the business's outlook, you said the Q2 or H2 has started off stronger than the way H1 kind of did, and you're on a better footing at the moment. Take me through kind of what you have in mind for the rest of the year. I see that there's still quite a bit around the capex that the business is still putting to good use. What does the second half of the year look like from a strategic point of view?
Look, from a trade perspective, it's typically, you know, a slightly better half because we have the summer holidays in the middle in the SA context. And I think given all the macro indicators are looking more positive, particularly last year, and maybe, you know, the exiting of load shedding over the peak period again would put us in a great position. So we're excited about the second half from an operational perspective. From a strategy perspective, you know, we need to execute on our plan, but there's one big project we have, and that is the frozen warehouse that we're building on our Midrand campus. So not necessarily something that we would typically be doing. It's probably a once in a decade project, so that will be, you know, quite a lot of capex, up to 180 million that we'll be spending, and making sure that we are watching that like a hawk and making sure we execute on that project, which will run over year end, but it will complete around May 25.
Darren, you touched on the fact that you are expecting a better kind of summer period in South Africa. We just got our inflation print out today as well, suggesting that inflation has moderated to where we might be in for more rate cuts. Are you seeing that that would be a positive for the business? I mean, our consumers have been under pressure for quite some time.
Yeah, historically, it has been good for our business. I mean, we're a discretionary spend and we're not a material spend. So, you know, there's some level of impulse purchase And I think, you know, improving the discretionary income would help us. So, you know, an interest rate cut, depending on what it would be, and petrol price cuts, and not having to fork out for load shedding are all good prospects for our business. So we'd be very happy. I mean, we have to obviously, you know, make our own plan, so to speak, and be clear on what we're driving. But macro factors like that definitely help us. And we've seen that historically, and lower inflation, particularly food inflation, in our case, is also helpful. And at this stage, you know, food inflation is also dropping, not quite to those levels, but definitely, you know, seeing some respite.
Darren, are you guys optimistic about the areas outside of South Africa? I mean, you operate 62 plus odd restaurants in the UK as well. You've got restaurants within the SADC region. Are you as optimistic about the external environment or the external countries as you are about South Africa?
We as optimistic about SADC countries, there's no doubt. The UK is a tough place to trade right now, but we've been there a long time. So we think we have a steady business, but the outlook is going to be pretty tough. And then, you know, the non-SADC African countries we're optimistic about, but, you know, it's hard going and it's costing us some money right now. And we need to, you know, reverse that position. So I think that's going to be a little bit of a harder climb, but we are optimistic. You know, where we open our brands in these markets, the consumer reacts well to them, particularly Steers and Debonair's Pizza. So, you know, that's the reason for our optimism, but we need to be converting that into profitability. So, you know, we've got some tasks ahead of us given, you know, the kind of losses in H1, which have always been there but never been disclosed. And we've obviously now disclosed those to shareholders, and we need to, you know, work around how we get it right, because I mean, ultimately, that's what we're about. Is, you know, one needs to invest for the future, but you need to make, you know, profit on that investment.
Speaking of investing for the future, Darren, before I let you go, I want to touch on that interim dividend up 9%. We are obviously happy to see figures like that. Does that bode well for a final dividend come year end if we kind of have the expected second half of the year that you are projecting?
Yeah, I think we have a positive outlook. I mean, one has to take the dividend each reporting period. But I mean, historically, you know, outside of any shock events, we have been a consistent dividend payer and dividend grower. So that's the value proposition we'd like to keep. So, yeah, definitely not just a once-off for us. I mean, we were very cautious at the year-end dividend, and that was, you know, kind of a week or two before the election. So I think this does signal a change in our view and the board's view around that. So, yeah, we know that supported by a good sales, you know, performance, we can sustain that number.
Well, we wish you the best of luck for the second half of the year, Darren. We look forward to seeing how it all shapes up and how you guys do. We'll keep in touch and see if we can get a sense of the full year's picture when that comes around. That's Darren Heal, who is Group CEO at Famous Brands, on their first half of the year.
Unlock endless possibilities with Eduvos. Study applied science, commerce, law, humanities or IT. Award-winning private higher education. 12 campuses, one future. Yours. Pre-enroll now for 2025 at eduvos.com. Eduvos. Your education, your future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
KPMG has put out an inaugural Africa edition of their CEO Outlook for 2024. Some interesting reflections around the economic outlook, the geopolitical tensions and events that are still persistent in the market, and generally how CEOs are seeing the world at the moment. I'm joined on the line by Frank Blackmore, lead economist at KPMG, to take a look at this and try and make sense of the data. Good evening, Frank. Lovely to speak to you again. What are the key insights from having spoken to Africa's CEOs? I'm sure there's a sense of optimism, but there might also be a sense of a need to get things back on track and to build the African continent.
Yes, absolutely correct. I think the focus remains strongly growth-orientated, and you see this both in the sort of challenges and threats highlighted by CEOs, but also the sort of operational priorities that CEOs have sort of shared with us. So on the sort of threats, you rightly say geopolitical complexity, economic uncertainty, embracing and embedding AI, how do we use AI, and growth prospects. So those things are strongly sort of, impacts that have come from perhaps out of Africa, especially the geopolitical complexities, the economic uncertainties, as well as the influences on growth prospects. And I think CEOs are looking how can they manage these type of challenges currently in order to generate growth. If I look at the top operational priorities, it's again, how do we defend ourselves from impacts from overseas? So in other words, inflation proofing both capital and input costs. We know most African economies are small, open economies. And therefore, when anything goes right or wrong internationally, the impacts on Africa are disproportionately higher in both directions. And so that focus on how do they stabilize the business environment, inflation-proofing your supply chains, looking to organic growth and creating resilience in the supply chain. I think all of those issues have resulted from the recent past in terms of the impacts of COVID, the impacts of the war in the Ukraine, and how that's impacted Africa, its people and businesses over that period of time. So I think strongly growth orientated, and then of course technology is a big a big buzzword that's come in as well. Both using technology in order to help generate revenues and efficiencies within the business, but also defending against technology in terms of cybersecurity and cybercrime.
Frank, you mentioned buzzwords, and I remember one of the buzzwords that we used to have coming out of the pandemic and going into sort of 2021, 22-ish was ESG. How are CEOs feeling about ESG at the moment?
ESG is there, but given the more recent buffers of business within the African continent, as I said, inflation has been particularly harmful to a lot of business. Both, from the client's perspective, because it's taken money out of customers' pockets and therefore the buying power has been reduced throughout the continent, but also on the business side. If you wanted to invest or expand your operations, that would be a lot more costlier than before, and you'd need a higher return to make up the difference. So I think these issues are front of mind as they would be if you've just been shocked by these type of inflationary impacts. But CEOs are mentioning, obviously, the importance of ESG, particularly because of Africa's unique context, both on the sort of food security aspect. We know that only around 20% of arable land in Africa is under irrigation, leaving 80% to the elements. Also, statistics such as a 1% increase in the general temperature globally has an impact of 1.5 times of Africa, even though they've contributed least to this problem. And it's due to African economies having a lot of agriculture as part of their GDPs. It's important for them to, on a revenue basis for their economies and a growth basis, to ensure that they get stability from that agricultural crop over time. So there's a lot of elements of ESG that are creeping in, as well as talent retention. If we lack the growth within African economies, you're losing your best talent to Europe, to North America, to Asia. And how do we keep that talent within Africa was another aspect that came up.
That's quite an interesting reflection there, Frank, around the talent retention, because we have seen a couple of companies complain about a brain drain, at least in South Africa, but it looks as though this extends now to the African continent at large. Are there kind of areas where CEOs might be seeing opportunities? I know the economic outlook might be a bit positive at this stage, but are there other areas where CEOs might be saying this could be a good area for the continent to grow through?
I think the biggest sort of growth targets or goals are sort of medium to longer term goals. They include things like integrating African economies, inter-African trade, creating more infrastructure, joining up African economies in order to have the benefits of that trade and those relationships remain on the continent. I think that's the long-term goal of a lot of the CEOs we've spoken about. And it also is in reaction to what we've seen in, you know, the war in Ukraine, divergence of shipping routes, increasing costs. It's difficult trading outside of the continent. Obviously, it's difficult trading intra-Africa as well these days. But that's, I think, on most CEOs' agenda. How do we get more from our neighbors, et cetera? How do we develop infrastructure? How do we develop sort of the laws, the regulations, the tax systems, et cetera, to support this intra-African trade? And I think that has a lot of promise.
There's a lot of promise on the African continent, and the CEOs of African businesses are optimistic. I think we'll leave it at that, Frank. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Frank Blackmore, lead economist at KPMG, on their inaugural Africa edition of their CEO Outlook for 2024.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by EduVos. So we're getting the country back on track. We are building this economy, or rebuilding this economy rather, and as part of that, critical skills are always important, but critical skills come from having the right education in place. With that in mind, we're going to be chatting to one of our leading private education providers in South Africa to understand the offering that they've got and understand how that could benefit us going forward. Joined on the line by the director and shareholder at EduVos, Dr. Rian Steenberg, to take a look at the value of education and how it fits into the economy. Good evening, Dr. Steenberg. Lovely to speak to you as always. When we think about economic growth, we think about jobs, we think about all of the inputs that go into building an economy, and one of those key inputs is education.
Definitely. And I think education really is a powerful catalyst for economic growth, and it really equips people with the knowledge and skills needed to drive development, foster innovation, and that very important aspect, which is entrepreneurship. And I must say that at EduVos, we see firsthand how our graduates contribute to the growth of industries across South Africa. We bring together a lot of significant capacity in graduating specifically technology skills, and also biomedical sciences, legal and commerce areas. And we increasingly seeing that these graduates form smaller companies, join larger companies, and that really catalyzes the growth. And I think it's really time for us to get to a new economic vision for South Africa, because I think a lot of the language and narrative is around what was wrong in the past and not what should be right in the future. So I really love your comment that it's where we're talking about education being more than a pathway to employment. It really is a national imperative that we invest in it.
Speaking of the future, Dr. Steenberg, what about the importance of the right education? Because we're seeing a shift in the things that are becoming important in the sectors or the industries that are leading to global competitiveness. And that also then obviously necessitates a shift in the right kind of skills for that. How do you now have, okay, I've got education, but is it fit for purpose? Yeah. Is it fit for what the world needs now?
I think that that's a very important way to look at it in terms of saying, what does the world need now? But I think we have a much easier problem to solve in what does Africa and what does South Africa need right now? And I think we need to, while I think everybody wants to have technology skills, at the same time, we mustn't forget that a lot of what we need to do is about humanness. I think if we do the research, we're increasingly seeing that economies that are only tech-driven are failing. And I think that we need to find the balance between tech and people. In Africa, we have that model. So while at this point in time, I would really recommend you look at your fourth IR skills, we're also incorporating AI into every aspect of the curriculum, because AI is changing the way that lawyers do their work, that teachers do their work, that accountants do their work. And it's about how does that actually impact you and your career. So our graduates, I think, and I believe, and that's what we hear, leave with the advanced technical and soft skills that make them competitive, not just in South Africa, but on a global stage.
Dr. Steenberg, you mentioned the specific needs that Africa would have, and that brought up quite an interesting thought around when we look at those communities within Africa at the moment. Access to education is something that's still a challenge. So education in itself is one aspect of it, but access to education, particularly in a world that is more globalized than ever before. We surely should be able to have greater access to education at a local level and make this as seamless as possible. And I suppose that's kind of where you have Eduvos's blend of distance learning plus on-site learning and all those other products.
Definitely. I think access needs to be addressed on two levels. One is access to the economy, which implies access to education. So quality education is one of the most powerful tools for social mobility. And Eduvos, we're really committed to providing access to quality education to students from all backgrounds. And we know that education reduces inequality, promotes social cohesion, and really creates pathways for participation of a person in a real economic benefit. And that's something that both the public and private sector needs to recognize and support. I recently came across a very disturbing statistic where incomplete public university qualifications, there's about 100 to 250,000 people, and that has created a national historic debt of 16.5 billion rand. Now, to put that in context, there is 100,000 to 250,000 bright young people that started studying but never got out. So I'm really, at this point in time, thinking very carefully about how can we certify people that don't have a complete or full qualification so that we can start closing that gap. Because I think we need to create a space in which we allow people to enter the workplace sooner, contribute to the economy, continue their education, because that's the way that you will reduce inequality over time. We've started workshopping this idea with different players in the industry, and I think you'll see something coming from us very soon in that. But I really think we need to start creating access by allowing people to succeed. And that is a very different mindset than I think is currently being practiced.
Dr. Steenberg, speaking of the innovative solutions that you're bringing to the market, I want to look at just the importance of certain sectors, and I'm thinking in particular around sectors like entrepreneurship and their role in providing sustainable solutions in the future. Because when we think about education, the last thing you want is to have the kind of education that, one, might become redundant, or two, that might not be as fit for purpose as what is required in the South African context. But things like entrepreneurship allow you to build a sustainable future, not for yourself, or not only for yourself, but for yourself, your communities, and those around you.
Absolutely. Universities and educational institutions like Eduvos are hubs for innovation and entrepreneurship. We provide our students with the tools to think creatively, solve complex problems, and to start businesses that have a real impact on the economy. And many of our graduates have gone on to become successful entrepreneurs. They've created jobs and they're driving regional growth. And by fostering an entrepreneurial mindset, which is one of our values at Eduvos, we ensure that South Africa can compete in the global innovation landscape. Very practically, we see that the people that come to our careers days are changing. They're not just large corporates. They're not just the top 1,000 companies. They are our alumni, and they're there as 2, 3, 4, 5 people that have started a business and that now are coming back to their institution to recruit people to work with them because they know of the type of skill that they're getting. And I'm so enthused by our young people and how they are taking the market opportunities and sitting and saying, we're not going to wait for large multinationals so that we get prize jobs. We're actually going to do it for ourselves. And we see a lot of that, and it's so heartening.
Speaking of not waiting for opportunities to come by, Eduvos has opened up pre-enrollments for 2025. Let's look at that before we wrap up the conversation. What does it mean for pre-enrollments, and what are the benefits of pre-enrolling?
100%. So I think if you haven't gotten a seat at a public institution already by the end of this month, the probability of you studying at a public institution is very, very low next year. And I think that's the difference between ourselves and public institutions, is that we are actually committed to giving people access. I know recently there's been some critical remarks from government officials about private higher education. And while the debate is healthy, you must remember that institutions like Eduvos are fully registered and accredited. We contribute significantly to the higher education landscape in South Africa, and we really give young people an opportunity to have the career that they envisage. And what that means is you can pre-enroll now, so you can utilize your existing matric results. And even if you do not necessarily qualify for the exact qualification that you intended to, we will get you a spot at one of our institutions. We've got plays next year. We believe we will have about 21,500 students, even more if more people pitch. And yeah, so you really have the opportunity to realize that dream and get that career that you have in mind and that best suits you and your skill.
The career of your dreams. There's more than 12 campuses around the country. There's more than 20 accredited qualifications that are internationally recognized. This institution certainly is putting education at the forefront, and it's always nice to see that they're adjusting their model to ensure that it's always fit for purpose. I think we'll leave it at that. Dr. Steenberg, always lovely to speak to you. That's Dr. Rian Steenberg, who is a director and shareholder at EduVos, joining me to reflect on education and its importance in the economy today. This interview is brought to you by EduVos. Your education, your future.
Unlock endless possibilities with EduVos. Study applied science, commerce, law, humanities, or IT. Award-winning private higher education. 12 campuses, one future. Yours. Pre-enroll now for 2025 at eduvos.com. EduVos. Your education, your future.
Ready to take control of your financial future? Moneyversity Plus is your go-to streaming edutainment platform for all ages. With fun, engaging content and downloads for kids ages 6 to 17 and practical lessons for adults of all ages, Moneyversity Plus makes learning about money easy and exciting for everyone in the family. Plus, as you learn, you can earn Old Mutual Rewards points, a win for your wallet and a win for your future. Whether it's mastering money basics or planning your financial goals, Moneyversity has you covered. Start streaming today and join thousands of others at moneyversity.co.za. Your plus one for financial wisdom.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Now, the South African Airways, that is the national carrier of South Africa, has come out with a rather surprising statement, surprising to the upside, or surprising in the positive sense, saying that they are debt-free. They might not be a problem-free, but they are debt-free, which is a start. I, for one, can't remember a time where this was the case. In recent times, there have been a lot of bailouts for the national carrier, but it looks as though we are turning the corner, we're getting back on the right track. And I'm joined on the line by the chair of SAA, Derek Hanekom, to take a look at this and a try and see if we can understand it. Good evening, Derek. Lovely to speak to you. And I think it's around 28 years, if I stand corrected. In the 28 years you've been in public office, do you remember a time where SAA was debt-free?
Well, I can't say that I spend my 28 years in office monitoring SAA, but I think you're probably perfectly correct, Jimmy. What you saw was obviously an airline that people speak about the former glory of SAA. And of course, it was an airline with a good reputation and flying to many parts of the world, but at great expense to the taxpayer and to the fiscus. The debt just steadily accumulated. In the last few years, of course, during the period of state rescue, the airline got really abused, as did many other institutions, and the debt became quite unsustainable. And of course, the rest of the story is known. Went into business rescue, came out of business rescue, and now there's a steady process of recovery.
So where do we stand now, Derek? We're debt-free, but what does that actually mean? Because, as you said, there have been bailouts in the past. There's been a lot of confusion, business rescue and all of that. What do we actually mean by debt-free at the moment? And what is the financial position of SAA?
Okay, so it's pretty much what it says, that all the historical debt has been covered. And if you the income, the financial statements of 22-23 will show, which have just been audited and will be released quite soon, will show that there is no debt on the balance sheet. Everything is covered. So it is what it is. It's a debt-free company. However, that doesn't mean we're completely out of the woods, but we are certainly largely out of the woods. Because there's a forward planning process as well, so we have a corporate plan that does not depend on government subsidy at all. What we did mention at Scopa was that although the balance sheet is fundamentally healthy, is sound, the cash situation is not what it should be. So in the event of any mishap, anything like a bird strike that happened at the end of last year, we don't have that cash cushion, which is why we mentioned that we are approaching the banks, in discussion with the banks, for a loan facility, not taking a loan, but a loan facility that we would be able to draw on should the need arise. So in our plan ahead, and we work on a five-year planning horizon, we've had to, because of the withdrawal of Takatso, which you didn't mention now, but that's a reality. Our previous corporate plan built in the expectation of a cash injection of 1 billion rand per year for the next 3 years, 3 billion rand. Well, Takatso deal, as everyone knows, it fell through. And so we had to go back to the drawing board and adjust our corporate plan and take out this 3 billion rand that we had in it previously. And we had to, in doing so, we had to postpone some of our expansion plans by about a two-year period. So some of the, as you know, we launched the Sao Paulo flight, and that's our expansion into intercontinental flights. We did that in October last year, and in April this year we introduced the Perth flight. And but for the rest of the intercontinental flights that we were planning on, will just have to be held in abeyance for a period, unless some kind of cash injection does come in, which could very well happen. And unless there are partnerships that allow us to do things that we aren't currently able to do. But certainly, whatever our expansion plans are, they're not based on any kind of subsidy from the state.
Well, Derek, let's look at that Takatso deal and the expansion or the cash injection that's required at the moment. Are there any outstanding matters related to the Takatso matter in the form of potential court cases that might be hanging over SAA's head or anything of that sort? I'm just trying to ascertain from a cash injection or an investment injection point of view, if SAA is open to a partner at the moment, are there going to be strings attached in that kind of partnership, and kind of what conditions are we looking at here?
So on Takatso, no, that it was a termination by mutual agreement. So there's nothing, there are no court cases. I think it was amicably settled. And it was, SAA did not get involved in the discussions with Takatso. It was purely between the shareholder, as represented by Minister Gordon, and Takatso. So, I mean, but it was a reality that was confronting us. They said this or that was presented to us, that this is the deal is going to happen at an earlier stage. It became clear before the deal was terminated that there could be difficulties, and we started, planning for the eventuality of the deal falling through, which it then did. But no, nothing, no court cases, amicably settled. Apart from a new share equity partner or the possibility of an investment, which we're only building into our plan for 2 or 3 years from now. So everything that we plan for the next 2 years are based on what we have. But the situation could improve through partnerships. Partnerships don't necessarily mean investment in SAA. They could take different forms. For example, we're in close discussion. In fact, there's a possibility that we will have a flight to China next year. I can't give the details because everything hasn't been settled. But a flight to China through a partnership with a Chinese company, and in which case we would own the aircraft. Our constraint is aircraft, obviously, because even leasing an aircraft costs a lot of money. So it's the you know, a partnership of that kind would give us the necessary aircraft. There's something else that we mentioned at Scopa as a potential cash injection, but it will have to take its course, and we would have to get an agreement from the shareholder. And that is the pair of landing slots that we have in Heathrow. They have considerable value. They're both being leased at the moment, and they are bringing in a certain amount of money. But if we want cash injection, that would be a potential source. Not selling the slots, but selling one of them. Even in SAA's heyday, when we were operating at our highest level, we only used one of those slots. They're being leased to, the two slots are leased to British Airways and Qatar at the moment. Qatar's lease expires at the end of March, and they may well be interested in buying it. And it might be the best thing for us to do is to sell. And that's a considerable capital injection. Those landing slots are valuable.
Derek, before I let you go, any investors, whether they are local, offshore, international, anyone that listens to this conversation that wants to do business with SAA, how do we sell SAA and get SAA back to being the leading airline on the continent as it once was?
Well, I think the facts are starting to speak for themselves, Jimmy. We had to do a lot of fixing. We shouldn't underestimate the damage done during that period. So a lot of the fixing has been done. We've got a very dedicated management there, very competent, dedicated, and we have a very committed board. And it's a privilege for me to chair this board, albeit an interim board. Minister Creasy will, in the next months, appoint a full-time board. But the signals we're getting, Jimmy, from possible investors are positive. Even the banks, where they were early on this year and where they are now, the willingness to start serious discussion about the loan facility, things have changed dramatically. I mean, I think if nothing else, if SAA is not going to get back to its so-called, in inverted commas, former glory, it's going to proceed on a very carefully considered path. And it will expand and it will grow. At the moment, it's the South African airline that, you know, has the international footprint, including on the African continent, and that's where we have the advantage, if you like. We're not a big player on the domestic market, but you know, you have to concentrate on what you're good at and what you're able to do, and the really profitable routes are these international routes. If carefully chosen, of course. So that's where we are. I think there's a credibility factor. People have started to, enough time has gone by with the right things having been done, including the tabling of our financial statements, bit of a delay with the last ones. The relationship with the Auditor General's office is very good. We've had our little areas of disagreement. We've overcome them. And by February, we will be completely up to date with all of our audited financial statements. There's a recognition that we are back on track. We recovered. There's organizational competence. There are no serious suspicions about ongoing resident corruption in SAA. It's cleaned up. The SIU has been there for a couple of years. Most of the people who are being investigated, in fact, all of the people being investigated, are no longer with the company. Some of those cases have already been referred to the Hawks, and more will be in the months to come. So, I mean, at the moment we can say the airline, albeit a much smaller airline than it was before, has restored its credibility, and there's a growing level of confidence in the future expansion of the airline.
If nothing else, the airline is ready to soar to new heights. We'll leave it at that. Derek, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Derek Hanekom, chair of the SAA board, on the fact that the national carrier is now debt-free.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's another Wednesday, it's another Executive Lounge, and this week we're chatting to the Managing Director of a company called Tuesday Consulting. They specialize in executive search. I'm joined on the line by the company's Managing Director, Wendy Spaulding, to take a look at this and get to know her a little bit better. Wendy, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. What does 25 years in executive search look like? I think it's a little more than 25.
Let's not add any more years. That's okay, Jimmy. Thank you for the invitation. I'm delighted to be chatting to you this evening. 25 years in executive search. Gosh, that is a long time. What it does mean on the positive is that I have had the opportunity to work with some amazing people on that journey. I have worked with a variety of clients, obviously some amazing candidates. And the interesting thing is that many of those relationships exist today. So I've really got to know people over those 25 years, followed their careers, followed their journeys, and built some wonderful relationships.
Wendy, what would you say has been the most challenging part of working with executives, working with so many different personalities and so many different characters?
I think you've already hit the nail on the head. That is a challenge. We are not in the business of product. This is a service that we offer. And I think that it's not a product that you take off a shelf. Each individual is so unique. So you're working with executives can be incredibly challenging. They have very busy diaries. They have lots of priorities, numerous demands. And so sometimes just having the space and time to have the strategic conversation around executive hiring needs or executive as candidates is one of the challenging things. But to your point, they are personalities, they are individuals. If they're having a good day or a bad day, it often reflects on the work that we do, even a good month or a bad month. So yeah, I think the nuances around the fact that we are dealing with humans and not a product is the important message there.
Wendy, what's one philosophy you live by, whether it's a personal one, whether it's a professional one? What's the one thing that anchors you in how you approach your day-to-day?
It's a good question. And without wanting to sound too cliche, Tuesday Consulting's purpose is investing in people. And that is a concept that we've had in our business for many years now. And it's such an easy one for us that grounds me on a daily basis. I can think about how I start my day, about the work that I do, the meetings that I hold. It really begins with obviously investing in myself because I am a person too, but it extends to the work that we do and the impact that we have.
Wendy, let's move a little away from work. Tell me about the 30% Club.
The 30% Club is a global initiative to ensure, support, and do research on women at board levels. So it was an initiative that started in the UK. It is now a global initiative with representative offices across the world. And we do a lot of research around how we track in terms of, are we able to get more women on boards? Is this a sustainable initiative? How do we change the gender narrative and ensure greater gender equity? So it's a really, really important initiative from a gender transformation perspective.
Wendy, what else is really important to you when it comes to the de-stressing and downtime? I mean, you're clearly focused on providing the best and exceptional service to your clients, but how do you stay rejuvenated and stay refreshed?
I try my best. It's not always my priority, unfortunately. So I do have to remind myself that balance is important. I really enjoy some physical activity. So I started my day this morning by going to a Pilates class early, and that was great. It was a great start to my day. I like to do a bit of meditation. I actually like to do meditative walks. So I walk quite regularly, and I have created the art of meditating whilst walking, and that is an amazing balancing act for me and creates some peace in my life. And then I really like to spend time with my family over meals, just chatting and engaging and connecting. And I am also, I'm afraid like a lot of other people, love some downtime in front of Netflix or anything like that, just to disconnect from the day-to-day work.
Health and wellness are so important. We're going to leave that conversation there for the moment because it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael and the top sport updates. From my side, I'm going to continue this conversation, but I'm going to say good night. Good night.